This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Honalee Culpepper, director of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, and you are listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Justin Ozer, and join with me today are my Romulan agents, maybe? My co-hosts, Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shea Matala. So, Chrissy and Brandon, how are you doing today? And you can tell me some secrets if you want. It's up to you. Whisper them in my ear, if you like. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to see you, J.O. and C.S. It's great.
Yes, B.S.M. Yeah. Good to see you.
Just call me B.S.
B.S.
Perfect.
That's good. I'm happy to be here, you know, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to be acknowledged for what I truly am, the stubborn northerner that I am.
Oh, yeah. I love that you tweeted about that. I hadn't even thought about that, but that's perfect. I don't see any ridges yet, but...
I'll just frown at you more.
There you go.
So, Chrissy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. And I guess I'm a stubborn northerner, too, because I'm not terribly far south of Brandon. Being in Michigan.
If you're below me, you're in the south.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm below you guys. I'm right on the border with Mexico and El Paso. So
So it's more than 12 degrees where you are. That's good.
It's more than 12 degrees Fahrenheit, but it does get cold here. It is, it's 55 right now, but it was about 28 the other day.
Okay.
So anyway. Yes. Now that we've gone through that, so we are here today to talk about the third episode of Star Trek Picard, The End is the Beginning.
I had a homework assignment for you, though, first, Justin.
You had a homework assignment that you hadn't told me about?
I was going to say, I don't remember this at all.
You told me. Yeah. Okay.
Did you call your coworkers cheeky effers?
That's right.
Oh, let's see. I didn't take that as homework. I took that as a joke that I was going to, but no. No, I did not. Did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. No. Well,
I came close to calling my students that one time, but you know.
And we did have none of that this week. But so for the third episode, let me get the initial thoughts that you guys have. So, Chrissy, you want to go first?
Just in terms of first impressions, Picard is still acting like he's the captain and everybody is the crew sworn to follow his orders. And he has put himself in a position where he has a crew who's going to maybe follow his orders, although Raffi kind of, don't know.
That's interesting. So your first impressions had to do with Picard and how he's still behaving?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because the previous Leon starts out with the Admiral, you know, saying that, you know, he's not going to go out in space again. And
okay. Interesting. Brandon, your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts on this is right off the bat, this is my favorite episode so far.
All right.
So
favorite episode of the three. So the three are we including so Children of Mars or not?
I'm not sure. I probably have to watch Children of Mars again, but I probably still like Children of Mars more. But I think this is my favorite episode of the series so far. And I actually stopped after I'd watched the episode a couple of times and I thought something to myself. And it's an interesting thought for me. So I want to talk about it kind of right now, like right at the beginning here.
Yeah, sure.
But I've made it well known that I haven't been too happy with Discovery. I haven't been too happy with the way that it's gone and whatnot. And this isn't meant to be as a comparison between the two, but I think that having Picard on the air and with how much I'm really loving Picard right now is going to help me with my disappointment in Discovery.
Interesting.
Because when Discovery was on the air for season one and season two, while we, like, well, I guess before season two aired, we knew we would be getting more Star Trek. But when season one was on the air, like, this, we didn't know what was coming. We didn't know anything. As far as we knew, this could be it. And so that was it for Star Trek. This was the first Star Trek that was on TV, and it was the only Star Trek that was on TV after, what, 15 years, I guess it was, or something like that, 14 years, something like that.
Been a while.
So that was it. And this was all the new stuff. And I'm not a big fan of the Kelvin timeline, so everything that had been new for Star Trek for quite a while, I hadn't been a fan of. And now I've got something that I'm a fan of. And I know that there's more coming out. But having something new and something new that I'm loving puts less pressure on Discovery for me, because it's no longer the only thing that's out there. So if I don't like it as much, it's not going to matter as much to me, because there is more new content coming. You know, like, I love Voyager, but when it was on the air, it wasn't my favorite. So it wasn't that big of a deal if Voyager didn't, you know, reach its mark 1 week, or if DS9 didn't reach its mark 1 week, because there was always the other show coming, right? Mm-hmm. There was always fresh content out there. So I'm actually really hoping when season three comes around that this is going to help me, you know, come to terms with my fandom and realize that it's okay if Discovery is not my favorite Star Trek, and it's okay if I'm not loving Discovery, because I don't want to not like Discovery. I want to love Discovery, right? So, I don't know. So, I'm just, that's kind of some general thoughts that I had that I kind of realized with this episode that I kind of wanted to share. So, yeah.
No, that's very interesting. I've been thinking, before I talk about my initial thoughts on this particular episode, I've been thinking about it a little bit too, and it's hard not to compare with Discovery. And I think, Brandon, I've felt quite differently about it. I've loved a lot of it. I know there've been some issues and things like that, but I think that I'm loving Picard even more. And I really love this third episode. I felt like they took, you know, the great things in the first two episodes and just kind of were able to move things along and bring in new characters that are really fantastic and just to be excited for, like, what's coming next, right? So I love this episode. I don't think it's my favorite of the three. I think the first one, Remembrance, is still a little bit higher for me. And I actually had a chance to rewatch Remembrance and Maps and Legends this week because I was interested to see, like, if I watch one and two and then three comes out, what's that like? So Remembrance is a little bit higher, but this one I really loved a lot. And I think we're going to go into, you know, a lot of what was happening in this episode. So let's start out with favorite moments from the episode. One each, or maybe more. But Chrissy, you have a favorite moment?
Yes. I had to narrow it down to two. My first was that we finally see the Vasquez Rocks as the Vasquez Rocks. That was just wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
I had to pause it. We were eating dinner, and I started laughing when I saw the Vasquez Rocks thing on the screen. And I watched this with my parents and my husband, and we have dinner, and I had to pause it and go, okay, so the Vasquez Rocks is where they filmed everything that was outside. And it's been used in so many episodes of all of the series, and it was just really great. And then the other one, more funny, I loved how they woke up the Romulan guy.
By spritzing water in his face.
Oh, shoot, her name just fell out of my head. Laris, yeah. Yeah, Laris, where she's got the little water spritzer thing.
I love that. At first, she was bringing something up, and I was like, oh, is that going to be like some magic thing or a hypo spray or whatever? She just spritzes water. It's perfect. Yeah,
I can really see her doing the exact same thing to the dog. You know, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like when the doctor wakes up that guy in Voyager. It's like, can you wake him up? And he's like, wake up! Just like yells at him.
That's great.
It's just not what you're expecting. I got to say about your thing about Vasquez Rocks. I mean, I'm disappointed that it's actually supposed to be Vasquez Rocks.
Oh.
Yeah, because that means that we're not going to see Lazarus.
Okay. Yeah. I know you love the alternative factor, but
I love the alternative
probably
factor.
Not a connection with Picard.
They all can still exist.
I was holding out hope, you know. I was holding out hope. So, you never know.
There's lots of rocks. He could be on the other side.
What about some favorite moments from you, Brandon?
Okay, so I got two. I'm going to talk about it now, and then we will be talking about it later. But Patrick Stewart's delivery of that word, carry on, when he like gives Raffi the file and he's just like,
yeah,
you're looking at this, aren't you? She's like, no. He's like, yes, here's more information. Carry on. He just hangs up on her.
Mm-hmm. I totally laughed at that.
Yes, I thought that was great. Now, my favorite thing in the episode, okay, the theme song has finally hit for me.
All right.
And there's a specific reason that the theme song has finally hit for me. And that's because it played during the nostalgic scene when Picard is talking with Laris.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about how he's going to be missing the Vineyard when he leaves. And it's then that it's like, okay, this is Picard's new theme for this show. And I hadn't felt that yet. Okay. But I felt it there. And I'm like, okay, this is it. This is now the theme for this show. So now that was the first time that I watched it. And then every subsequent watching on it, I'm like, okay, yes, this theme works for me now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I was really happy about that.
Awesome. So yeah, there was a lot of stuff I really loved in this episode, but if I were to narrow it down to a couple of things, we're going to talk about it in a little bit. So I'll talk about it more in depth, but I thought some of the stuff that was going on in the opening scene between Raffi and Picard in 2385 was fantastic. Yeah. And we'll talk about that more, but also just like all the stuff that we see of Raffi. I know you tweeted Brandon that she's become like your favorite character in Picard. I love this character. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to tell who might be a favorite character at this point, but I just love like her personality and what she's been through and, you know, just how she reacts to things, I think is just like magnetic. I think there's something about the character that's really great. So that was definitely a highlight, the places where you see her. So I guess on that note, let's go into the episode itself. So it starts out in 2385 after the attack on Mars. So you're seeing Picard and Raffi on Earth, and Picard has just met with the commander in chief of Starfleet. And so they have this discussion. And I thought this was a really great scene because it filled in some more of the reasons why Picard felt that Starfleet wasn't being true to who they are. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on this scene. So, Chrissy, I'll start with you.
Yeah, the thing that hit me most out of this scene is that Raffi is blaming Picard for what happened with her career. Okay, that there's, and we're going to learn more about that, I'm sure. But between this and the later scene between them, it seems as though she thinks it's his fault that she's not in Starfleet anymore. And so I'm wondering what the context is on that. Now, you resign and get me fired.
I think one thing I saw that kind of makes sense as an explanation is like, so he was, maybe we'll just get into the details. So apparently there was the attack on Utopia Planitia and Picard had a backup plan that was like, okay, there are these other shipyards. By the way, I love that. They talk about Beta Antares and Eridani A, which we only knew as shipyards before based on dedication plaques in a couple of episodes. So they have these other shipyards so they could make more ships, but there's, and, you know, bring up, I think they said, I don't know, they had some other ships that they could bring in, but as far as the manpower to run the ships, they'd have to use synthetic labor for that, and it's been banned. So, and I think Raffi's disappointment is that Picard just said, either take my plan or I resign, instead of like maybe continuing to work and push. It's kind of interesting that she has this line that's like, you know, that's basically saying you've always been able to do the impossible before. Why now? Why not now? Right. And we kind of feel that as Star Trek fans, sometimes like they get into these impossible situations and they're always going to get out. Right. But this is the one time or the one thing that he can't get out of. And she's very disappointed by that. And I think it causes her to lose her security clearance and basically not really be able to do what she wants in Starfleet. And so she holds this kind of bitterness about it. There was also some background that the actress Michelle Hurd gave in the Ready Room with it was actually interesting. I mean, usually I might not want to bring things in, but I don't think it spoils anything, but because basically like she had a difficult childhood, she had some problems with addiction, and being in Starfleet and being with Picard helped her kind of through that. And then once she, you know, isn't able to do what she wants to do in Starfleet and has to leave, and you see this in the later episode, she kind of slides back toward toward addiction. So anyway, I know that's a long way of trying to explain it, but I thought it kind of made sense how she felt, especially with some of that context.
See, I didn't interpret it that way, that she was mad at him because of losing the job. Like, she's just shrapnel because she works so close with him, right? And while she's upset and disappointed that he resigned, I'm more thinking that the reason for her anger towards him is more because of the 14 years of him not contacting her and not reaching out to her after their friendship. Like, they're good friends. She calls him JL. They're close. Yeah. Okay, so they've got some kind of a bond. They're good friends. You know, if he brought her out of addiction and, like, maybe mentored her into Starfleet, I don't know. Maybe that's not the case. But even still, in the comics, we get the story that she's his first officer. They don't mention that in the episode, right? But they've worked really close together. So I think it's more that he ignored her for 14 years, right? While she spiraled down into this depression and paranoia and drug abuse, alcoholism and stuff, because she had nothing, right? She had a sense of worthlessness that she felt.
Mm-hmm. But I think even in the scene, though, she does seem angry as she walks away from him.
Yeah. Well, she's angry because she's getting fired, right? But I don't think she directly blames him. She's just like, oh, great, you quit and I'm going to get fired over this. Like, I don't believe that she blames him directly. Mm. She understands what's going on. She understands that this is a game that the higher ups are playing.
Oh, of course. It's just the idea. The first thing I thought to myself, I'm watching this and I go, well, you know, she's in Starfleet. There's nothing else that she can do. And then I wondered if maybe, because she does seem to have these rough edges, shall we say, if she's a Rolaren type. And maybe she was a problem and this was her last chance to function in Starfleet again.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think she did have problems before, but it seems like she's been in Starfleet for a while. She's first officer Admiral Picard. So I think she's been in that for a while. I don't know if it's kind of a situation like Ro, but
so why didn't she take another posting or something? That's what I, you know, well, that's what bugs me.
Yeah, but I mean, her thing is, like, with what's happening right now, billions of people could die. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's just like, if we can't do something about that, then what kind of difference can we make? I think is almost how she's feeling, right? And then feeling like helpless to do that, because it's like, okay, maybe we can figure something out. And Picard's like, rescue billions of people without Starfleet assistance? Like, that's, we can't do that, right? And it's like, she's always had this hope that Picard will get them out of anything, and this is the one thing that he can't, and it's an extremely consequential uh-huh. thing. So and I thought it was really interesting in the scene as well that you see her walk away, and then there's kind of like a long shot that kind of comes away from him, and you see Picard's head, like, uh-huh. bowed down, like he's just kind of broken in that moment. It's really kind of striking.
Yeah.
I really like this scene. I think it explained and put together a lot.
Yeah. The other thing, though, that we get out of that, hearing Picard describe how he left in the interview is not at all what we see there. Because you see the interview and you kind of figure that he had a blowout, or that they told him absolutely not, never, which they basically did. And then he said, okay, fine, you know, I'm resigning. As opposed to what actually happened was he offered his resignation not thinking that he would have to follow through on it. So I think that kind of broke him too.
I thought it was consistent with what was in the interview. But I think this gives more context. But
okay. Yeah, yeah. But I think
the interview from episode one?
Yeah. So. Just, I mean, his tone, you know, it's they were no longer Starfleet. And it's not that it's not that with this, but you get the impression that he would have stayed and tried to push for this and maybe do other things.
Well, but he feels they're no longer Starfleet because they're giving into intolerance and fear, right. And they're banning like a whole class of life forms, and then they're going to give up on rescuing people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're not mutually exclusive. I don't think he expected that to happen. Well, he says he didn't expect it to happen. No. So.
Which... we're getting a theme here for Picard mm-hmm. as well, right? You know, excessive pride, self-confidence. He went into that meeting too with a bunch of hubris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I was thinking was, like, you should never go into a situation and say, there are these two options and not have a backup, yeah. right? He should have thought, like, well, if I offered this or my resignation, then what? And apparently, he just didn't even plan for that. Yeah. So there is some pride and hubris there. But Brandon, like your general thoughts on this first scene?
Well, first thing, I really hope that we continue this trend with these episodes in that we're opening the episode with some type of a flashback. I realize that episode one opened with a dream, which, you know, I know I'm reaching here, but that's kind of like a flashback in a way, right? But, you know, episode two and three have started with a flashback. I'm really hoping this trend continues because I really like this. I like getting this back information of what happened 14 years ago, and I want to see more of that story.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
But I loved this opening scene because of that. Like, I loved – Picard was – I agree with what you're saying there. And I do see a little bit of a disconnect with the way that he was presenting it at the meeting, at the interview, and the way that we saw it presented when he left the meeting. I do agree with what you're saying there, Chrissy. He was defeated. He was deflated when he walked out of that meeting right there because he did not expect them to do that. I don't know if he did it just as like, well – as a, like a last, because he says it's a last ditch thing. The way that I read that presentation, that acting by Patrick Stewart, he didn't plan on doing that when he left because they had a plan. Right. Raffi and him had sat down and said, this is what we're going to tell them. We're going to tell them about the shipyards. We're going to tell them about the ships. We're going to tell them about the synthetic bodies that we can use. And Picard's like, yep, they shot me down. They shot me down. They shot me down. Well, now what? I told them I'd resign. And so I think that he just brought that out last minute and wasn't expecting them to take it.
Yeah.
But he did it out of desperation without thinking it through properly when he said that during that meeting. But we'll never see that meeting, I don't think. But that's my impression of what I saw there. He just spit it out there, not really thinking, which is also not quite like Picard.
No, it's not.
Yeah, he usually thinks about the options and what if this doesn't happen or that doesn't happen. But yeah. I think he expected, well, hey, this has happened, but if I put forward this revised plan, of course it makes sense. And I'm Picard. I mean, they're going to say yes, right? And this is the situation where it's like, nope.
Yeah. Giving orders, even to his superiors.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a really great scene. And I agree, like, if they have flashbacks to start the different episodes, it's great to fill things in. I think also in the book, The Last Best Hope, that comes out, you're going to get more more background as well. I know on Tuesday.
I was excited. I tweeted Una McCormick. I got my confirmation that it's been shipped.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to try and read it before we record next Friday, but that may be a stretch because it's only a couple days.
Yeah.
So after that first scene in 2385 with Picard and Raffi, then it goes to, as you said, Chrissy in the Vasquez Rocks in 2399 with. It's kind of continuing the scene from the end of the last episode where Picard is talking to Raffi and basically trying to explain what's going on and to convince her to help him out. So, Brandon, what do you think of this scene?
Okay, so something interesting happened in this scene, this whole scene in general, that I wanted to ask you guys as a comparison. And I wanted to just see what you think. It's more of an analysis of like the storytelling, I guess. But a lot of people have brought up in Star Trek Nemesis when, you know, Troy is kind of beaten and battered after this mind rape that she experienced at the hands of Shinzon and his viceroy. And she asks to be relieved of duty and Picard says no. Okay. And a lot of people have had problems with this. Now, personally, I haven't, and the reason why I haven't had problems with this is because they are in a military situation, okay, and he needs all of his people on duty right now. Like, they are in an extreme situation, and she is a part of this military. Now, I know that's going to open up the debate of his...
But he goes further than just saying no. He basically implies, like, if you need to go through another violation of your mind, then so be it.
Yes.
And I have a problem with that.
Right.
him saying that.
In comparison to this, we've got a person here who's suffering, like, extreme emotional, troubling behavior, alcohol addiction, drug addiction. And this person is no longer in Starfleet. And he's pushing them in a similar way.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that comparison in my mind when I was seeing this scene when he was sitting there. Because she told him flat out, get out of here, please. OK, Okay, so she helped him to find this Captain Rios, right? And yes, she was investigating on her own, but then, yes, while I thought the line was funny, he did just call her and said, here's the information, look at it, and hangs up on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty persistent.
Yes. So, I mean, it's, again, interesting, but I mean, like, I don't have a problem with the writing of it. I'm just like, I saw a comparison between those two things.
It's very interesting. I mean, and also, like, consider this. You know that she has a problem with alcoholism, and how does Picard convince her to see him but to give her a bottle of wine, right? Like, that's kind of like, ooh, I mean, he's kind of just, like, pushing on that because I think in his mind, it's like this, there's something really dangerous going on here. It's really important to do something about it, and I need to do everything I can. So, but it is interesting to see his character and these kind of flaws or issues or things that he's dealing with or trying to push against people. It's very much more exposed in this show, and it's quite interesting to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to evaluate that, because it's kind of like he's really persistent about it. And it's almost like eventually, you know, she says, get out, and he starts to walk away, and she just kind of shakes her head, and she's like, I've got a pilot for you, you know, like, you're going to keep at me until I say yes, so I'm going to do this. I think it's brilliantly acted, and like the way that they do it is great, but it does really, I think you're right, Brendan, expose something in Picard's character at this point, and that you see some other times previously that's quite interesting. Like, I'm Picard, you're going to do what I want you to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Chrissy, what did you think about this scene?
Well, I hadn't thought of it in that way. I mean, I did see he was pushing. That goes along with what I said at the beginning. He's giving orders to people who have absolutely no reason to follow them. What caught me with this, at the end, or no, it wasn't at the end, but when she says she doesn't see things like people see angels or ghosts. Okay. Maybe I've been watching too much, like, Witcher and Game of Thrones and stuff, but does this mean she has some kind of special talent, or is she just a very good analyst?
I took it to mean she was a very good analyst and can put things together based on maybe less information than other people might need. But she also does say that she has, like, concrete evidence that somebody in Starfleet was complicit in this attack on Mars. And I don't know how she got that. I'm sure we'll find out. But it seems like she's very resourceful, but can also put things together. Like, I think she's saying, you know, I saw connections between the Romulans and the Federation that you didn't see.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I guess so.
Yes.
You know, like, so I think she's like, when she's on her game, I think she's just very, very analytical and very good at making connections and patterns.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably how I took it too.
Not like a supernatural thing, I don't think.
I'm just throwing the supernatural thing out there because, you know, you never know.
She's like Carrie on Homeland.
I will take your word for that. I have not seen Homeland.
She also mentioned in the flashback scene that she was like, synths don't just wake up one morning and turn homicidal. So again, there's people who don't think that these synths were angry. And I that's the way that we interpreted it last time. They weren't angry because of their treatment. They just attacked, therefore external influence.
Yeah.
Right. Although we get to see, you know, on the inside, what's happening as it happens. Whereas it's a question for me also in that attack. Like, is there, you know, security footage of what's going on that's beamed somewhere else and people can see it later? Or is there just nothing and they just know that some synths attacked and they don't know the context? I mean, we know like the whole context, or at least a lot of it. But I think, in that opening scene, she's like, this is ridiculous. Like, you don't just like ban an entire kind of class of beings just based on one incident. Like, that's crazy. But he's like, they're giving into intolerance and fear. And I think we're finding out in the show, there's some kind of Romulan influence toward that as well, pushing them to where they might not normally be. So,
right. But I'm still finding it weird that Picard would be okay with them having this fleet of androids and synthetic people to be just used as tools.
Yeah.
I don't know. This just feels strange to me for Picard to be okay with this. I don't know.
I think he would probably rationalize it as, like, after the attack, like, we need to use these groups of people in order to save billions of others, like a needs of the many kind of thing. But is it the case that you know, he's been convinced that these synths that they have aren't sentient and that it's okay to do that. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there does seem to be a pretty big difference between Data and what we see for the synths on Mars, right? I don't know, but...
Data when?
I mean, anytime, really.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, you know, you get the story from Juliana Tainer about how he didn't understand that he didn't have to walk around with clothes on. He should have been walking around naked. And he doesn't get jokes, you know, so early... pre-sentience, at what point did Data become sentient? This is not something we have an answer to, as Measure of Man taught us, but
it's a good question. I mean, I think Brandon, like, it is a great question. Like, why would he be okay with that being part of the plan to just draft a bunch of synths to like do the work for this? I think we might find out more about that.
Yeah.
Especially with all the references to Maddox, right?
Yeah.
So
We also, an interesting thought, like this is a meta level. So last week I had asked, I'm like, you know, did you know if that guy was the guy from Vegas, right? And I tweeted and we were about to record.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out, so Maria, I don't have the last name in front of me. She saw my post in a Facebook group and she did the legwork and she found that, yes, it was this guy, which I don't have his name in front of me.
Oh, Marina, I think it was Marina Kravchuk.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So she found it and she did the legwork and she brought up the pictures and found out that it was a guy that worked for MAC Cosmetics.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
But just think of the meta level of this. Just pause for a second and how meta is this. The guy that played Data at Vegas, right? So they got him to
for
be the
cosmetics.
Data, is now playing a proto Data,
right,
in Star Trek, right? So it's like, this is like maybe what Data would theoretically look like as a teenager or something like that if he like grew up.
Oh, maybe. But yeah, it is kind of crazy to think about that. And I have to think, since they've been talking about synths so much, that we'll see him in some version of that somewhere in the future. But
probably.
But yeah, like it is pretty interesting what happens between Picard and Raffi. And I think like the contrast between seeing them in 2385 and, you know, they're used to working together and there's this kind of crushing defeat that Picard has, and then many years later where Raffi is angry, like, why didn't you come to see me? Why are you coming to see me just when you need something? You know, I think it's fascinating to see, and the interplay that we'll see going forward, since they're going to be on this ship for at least a little bit, I think is going to be really interesting. So let's go on to something else in the episode. So I have it here as Hugh, Soji, and the XBs or X-Borgs, because there's kind of a bunch of different scenes that take place on the cube, and I wanted to talk about that. But let's talk about Hugh first, who, of course, is a character that we saw in Iborg in the Descent two-parter, and Jonathan Del Arco comes back as Hugh, you know, 20-some-odd years later.
Oh, that's got to be weird for him, hey?
It must be interesting, right? So I wanted to get impressions of what you think of Hugh in this episode, Chrissy.
I think he is the perfect one to try to bring Borg out of Borgness, away from Borg. I'm not sure how to become ex-Borg, I guess.
It's interesting. He's like the executive director of this reclamation project.
Yeah.
He's like running it, basically.
He's just another paper pusher now.
I'm the executive director. Open up. Like, yeah.
That was beautiful. Yeah. So I think that's a good place for his character to go. It makes sense. And, you know, we'll see more of him and everything else.
I'll be interested if they give some backstory for, like, what's happened in the meantime. Because the last time we saw him in Descent, he was, you know, he had led this rebellion of the Borg that were controlled by Lore against Lore. And then he was going to do something for this group. But I don't know. What's he been up to all this time? Clearly, his implants have been removed at some point. But, I think it's...
Why is he working with the Romulans and not the Federation?
Yeah.
It's a good question, because he does say at one point that, you know, he's something like he's not used to people listening to him, especially Romulans.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that came about. But Brandon, what do you think about seeing Jonathan Del Arco as Hugh?
He said some interesting things. Like, it was great to see him in this role, but I do question, why is he on this Romulan ship? Because, like, I don't get the impression that he was, like, on this Borg ship. I'm calling it the Romulan Cube is what I've been in my notes and stuff. I'm calling it the Romulan Cube, and I don't think it's built by the Romulans. It's just that they kind of have it now. Because all these Romulans that are on here are, like, Romulans. They said in here it's the only Romulans that have ever been assimilated by the Borg, are all in this one room. Yeah. Which is, I don't know, like, I don't know if that's entirely true. It's probably not, because, I mean, we did have that one guy that's in the Delta Quadrant still. Like, there was, with, in that first Borg episode, there was a Romulan there. Unity, I think it was.
In Unity?
With Riley, I think her name was Riley, right?
Yeah, that is Unity. I just don't remember the Romulan.
But, like, that's, I don't know, that's not really that important. I'm just saying that I'd find it weird that this is all the Romulans that have been assimilated.
Yeah, I was thinking they must, like, blow up their ship before they can get assimilated or something. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
But, why is he working with the Romulans? He also said a line that was, like, kind of weird to me, where he's like, everybody feels, like, I'm paraphrasing here because I didn't write this one down, but he's like, the galaxy treats the XBs poorly.
Yes.
Oh, I have the quote here.
Okay, quote here, because this is weird. Yeah.
If there's no more despised people in the galaxy than the XBs. People either see us as property to be exploited or as a hazard to be warehoused. Our hosts, the Romulans, have a more expansive vision. They see us as both.
Okay, so this is implying that there's like tons of ex-Borg just rocking around.
Yes. Yes, I made a note of that, because how is Seven going to fit in?
Well, I think that's a different question, but I think that like on this cube, when it shut down or whatever happened to it, there were, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Borg there, right? And they're disconnected from the collective. And I don't know. I hope we get more background, because like what happened at that point, they just were able to put a bunch of them in stasis, and they're just like removing implants one by one and freeing them from that. But it seems like there must be a lot. I mean, because, you know, you see the sign in the last episode, 5,843 days without an assimilation. That's about 16 years. So stuff has been going on this cube for a long time. And also it's been going on since before the attack on Mars, right? So I'm always thinking, like, what is the connection to what is going on, what happened with the attack on Mars and like the Romulan plots that are going, I don't know how it connects, but there must be a lot of them that over, you know, 16 years or something that they've turned into ex-Borg out of stasis. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to finding out more about that.
Absolutely. Because
that does imply that there's a lot of them just walking around.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, like, there's a lot of people in the galaxy.
I think, yeah.
Like, so, I don't know. Yeah, it's just kind of odd. It was an interesting line that stood out to me, so.
It was so interesting. It was intriguing because, like, yeah, it's a mystery that I'm sure they're going to explore. Like, what is going on here, really? I don't know yet.
That might connect to the synth thing, too, because if there's a distrust of synthetic life forms, is there a distrust of partially or influenced by?
Yeah, but I think they don't even fit into that category, because I think of, like, synthetic life or artificial life as, like, it's through and through, like, artificially created. Like, it wouldn't be around unless someone artificially created it, whereas these are, you know, beings that have been created in other means and had things grafted onto them that are cybernetic. I don't know.
I don't disagree there, but we're talking about, it's been established that these are people acting irrationally, if we take Picard's line. So, you know, follow that into the modern day and, for example, the guy that shot up the Sikh temple because he didn't understand the difference between Sikhs and Muslims.
Yeah. So, I want to give a few thoughts on Hugh. I mean, I think it's really interesting to see Jonathan Del Arco in this role, because you can see, like, I mean, you could see a bit of an arc too. Like, when you first see him in Iborg, he's just like disconnected from the collective. He's young, he's confused, he's scared, he doesn't know what's going on. And then over the course of the episode, you get to know him a little bit more, but he's, you know, just really beginning to see himself as an individual, and then, you know, he's reassimilated. And then you see him in Descent, where he is more of an individual, more of a leader. And this is kind of like taking that to, I think, maybe like a logical progression, where he is like a leader of this whole project, and maybe for, you know, the ex-Borg and advocates for them and all of that. So, I mean, we only get to see a little bit of him. I know we see more of him in later episodes, but I thought it, like, what you see of Hugh, it feels like he is a bit more confident and self-assured and kind of knows what he wants to get out of this, maybe, in some way. I don't know. But I really enjoyed what Jonathan Del Arco was doing with the role. Let's talk about some other stuff going on the cube. So, you have this whole part with Hugh coming to see Soji because he's impressed that she, you know, I don't know, spoke to the nameless in their tongue, whatever that means.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about that for a second here because, like, I just made the assumption, again, I don't speak Klingon, I don't speak Cardassian, I don't speak Romulan. So I just assumed that she was speaking Romulan to that person. How does she know the language when they don't even know what race that is?
Yes.
Well, the way that I took it, and I don't know how this would work, but I thought that maybe when you're assimilated into the Borg collective, there's some language that they all know when they can speak to each other. That doesn't quite make sense though, because they're like thinking their thoughts, but maybe there is some language that the Borg have. That's almost the way I took it.
Well, that he said,
speaks whatever the language they are.
He said, you're speaking to the nameless in its own language.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if that meant the language of the specific species or the language of the Borg itself.
Well, I would say it would be the species because he directly referenced, you're speaking to this nameless in its own language.
That's how I took it too.
Yeah, but if they don't even know the species, how would she know that? So yeah. I was taking it to mean that the Borg somehow like have their own like common language that somehow they speak in. That she knows, right? And that Hugh might know as well. That's the only way it makes sense to me.
Okay, so
hopefully we'll find out more.
Yeah. So to me, though, like, she knows a lot of stuff that she doesn't know that she knows.
Right.
Okay, because she said that. She's like, if you would have asked me if I knew about this and this and this after her encounter with Ramda, I would have said no. But she did. So again, so like, this is gonna boil back down to what's been programmed into her.
True.
Like, these things have been programmed into her already. So,
but if it's the, okay, so if it is the language of whatever species and they don't know what species is, how would Hugh even know that she was speaking correctly and not just gibberish? I think it has to be something about like a common Borg language, because they're not like, the collective isn't thinking in English, right? Like, we hear them think that and like that gets translated or whatever, but they must have some common language or something that they've developed.
Well, because she saw him or he saw her talking to the thing on like whatever it was. And, you know, she's one thing that we've seen in this show is that not everything is universally translated, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like right away, she speaks directly Romulan to the Romulan. She, you know, the Romulans mm-hmm. in Picard's house are speaking Romulan to each other. You know, so Rios says French words to Picard, right? Like, I know we've seen instances like that before, but, like, these languages are not all getting translated. So she can speak other languages. So if she's not speaking Romulan, like whatever languages Hugh knows, she's not speaking one that Hugh would know, I don't think.
Interesting. Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with that.
I'm surprised that they don't know what all these are as well, because the Borg classify all of them. Like, I don't know numbers, but all I know is species A472 because we never got their name. But yeah.
I'm thinking they don't know because whatever, I don't know, database that they have crashed when they were disconnected from the collective.
I could have just answered my own question. We never got the name for species 8472 either, right? So,
yeah.
No.
So,
that's true.
They might not want to use the Borg designation because they're trying to separate themselves.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting stuff. So,
yes, I know we got the name for species 8472 in Star Trek Online and in the book that was whatever the book was that was written by Jake Sisko. Yes, I know that. Okay. But that's not what we're talking about here. Just for the people who are screaming at their iPods right now. So,
yeah. So I thought one of the things that was interesting about this episode is like in the last one, you see Soji, but it's mostly like, you know, she's having this relationship with Narek. And I was kind of like, I don't know how much I like Soji, and I liked Daj a lot before that. But I came to feel in this episode that I liked Soji more because you could see like her curiosity and wanting to find out about Romulan mythology and how it could be therapeutic. And she seems to, you know, have compassion for other beings and all of that. I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but I came to like the character more in this episode than in the previous one. I mean, what did you guys think overall?
I didn't dislike her before, so I didn't really...
It's not that I disliked her. I was just kind of like, well, if all I know about her is that she has this relationship with Narek and she's an android, then... Eh. But I got to find out more about who she is, what makes her unique, and what she cares about.
Well, the thing about creating a common culture is terribly important. You know, so the idea that she's coming into this saying, these are a group of people who are not necessarily going to be able to reintegrate into the places from which they came, if they even want to. So they need to be their own culture. That's, for whatever it's worth, that's called an ethnogenesis, when you have people who are otherwise unrelated come together to create their own society.
Genesis?
Genesis.
Planet Forbidden. Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting idea to think that there are these people from these different cultures and they're trying to kind of maybe make their own culture and mythology to try to move forward in some way. Yeah.
Soji and Daj aren't doing it for me.
No?
Yeah, I don't know how to put it in words. Like, I'm not enthralled by their plots right now. Like, I'm starting to think Daj is dead.
That's probably the case.
I was expecting a bit of a laugh there, because I said at the end of the first episode that I'm like, I don't think Daj is dead. I'm starting to think she's dead. But as far as Soji goes, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I'm waiting to see where this goes. I'm not, like, crazily intrigued. Like, this whole thing where she's talking with Ramda, I'm like, this is really weird. Some of these things that they're talking about. Oh, I don't like the term mythology. I like to call it the news. I'm like, I don't know. Like, this is just all like,
that was weird. Yes.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Like, no, it's not.
Yeah. I don't know where she was going with that.
That's pretty interesting, because I think the stuff that was happening on the Borg cube in the previous episode, I was kind of like, eh, but I actually got more and more intrigued by it. And I actually found the scene with Ramda to be pretty interesting. Now, like the rest of it with the journey that's Picard's on with Raffi and seeing Rios and all of that, I am more into that,
yeah.
But I'm starting to get more into like the Borg side of it and wonder like what is happening. I actually really enjoyed the scene with Ramda, because I think it was just interesting to see that different perspective, see what Soji was going for, and that they're, I mean, it was building up to this thing like, you're the destroyer, the end of all, yes. Which who knows what that means. But I think we definitely need more context, but I was enjoying it more than before.
I wanted to point something out about that scene, because we had this scene and it was edited in a very similar way to the opening scenes of last episode, where they're intercutting between two scenes repeatedly.
Yep.
But in this one, it works, because the information that you're getting revealed in one is affecting what your perception of the other episode. Like, it's done completely different. This is done right.
I like both, but I like this one too.
So, like, because you're getting information from this Romulan agent that's in Picard's house, right? And it's similar information that we're getting on the Borg ship. But, you know, it's just the information is being layered upon layered, going back and forth between the editing style. And I don't think it would have worked had you watched those scenes in whole, one after the other. I think it worked better having them edited this way, and it didn't work in the last episode. I think the last episode, it would have worked better had they just had the whole scene in the chateau and then the whole scene in her apartment, for my preference. So,
yeah. No, I think it was effective, and it kind of like built up to this climax. Well, since you mentioned it, let's talk about this attack that happens at Picard's house.
We got to talk about one more thing on the cube. Are we done with the cube?
Oh, no.
I got one more thing,
one more thing on the cube. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'll let Christy go, because it might be the same thing that I'm going to bring up.
I'm going to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole about Roman mythology. So
do it.
Go ahead. Oh, all right. Okay. So, Roman mythology. Rome was founded by Romulus and Remus, twins who were the sons of the god Mars and the Vestal Virgin Rhea Silvia, and I won't do all the rest, but Romulus and Remus argue over where they're going to found their city, and they end up in a fight, and Romulus kills Remus, which is why we have Rome instead of Reem, I guess. So you have the living one and the dead one. Okay. Oh. And they both do become important parts of the Roman mythology. Romulus becomes the god Quirinus, who is one of the gods of the common people. I forget where Remus ends up in it, but that struck me when she said, are you the living one or the dead one? I was like, ooh, we've got some Roman stuff going on. It may not end up going anywhere, but that was the first place I went with it. So
I'm sure you're right.
I think it's definitely a parallel.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened to the Riemanns. So that is, you know, that might come into it.
Like in Star Trek?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure I would, if I had to guess, they're all dead.
Oh, yeah. Right. So if we're using that, then maybe Dodge is some kind of representative of that, or there's a Riemann connection. Mm. So.
That's interesting.
Awesome. Yeah. That's cool.
It probably helped that I had literally just taught it 2 hours before I watched the episode.
Convenient.
That helps.
Yes. Good timing.
So I take it you guys didn't catch it because we haven't mentioned it yet, but did you catch what happened when Ramda grabbed her arm?
I think it was pointed out to me that the little badge turns green for a bit.
I saw that mentioned, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I saw it mentioned, but like I didn't notice it in the episode because
it's really brief. I caught it and then like I had to watch the next time, but it's just like one shot.
But here's the question: are they in the gray zone? Because that's the place where it matters if it turns green and you should run.
Probably. I would say they probably are. But
yeah, like I totally kind of miss. I don't know what that means. It seems deliberate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I would think
there's some kind of danger. What I found interesting about that scene is that like all of this stuff is going on and, you know, Ramda's pointing this disruptor at Soji, and then after a while decides like she's going to commit suicide, and Soji goes at super android speed to prevent her from doing that. I think there are probably going to be some questions after that, right? Like, how did you do that?
You think it was that fast? Yeah. Because to me it felt slow.
I think it was really fast.
It felt like she had gun to her head a long time.
Doesn't the image kind of spread a bit?
It felt to me like she put it up and she was about to do it like in the next second, and then Soji went up there really quickly. I that was the impression I had.
Yeah.
I read it as quick moving too, because in part because of what happened with Dodge and how she was moving so quickly.
Yeah. See, but nobody seemed to react to her. Like, nobody was looking at her weird, like...
Well, all of the Romulans in the room looked at her really weird after that.
Okay.
They were giving her very dirty looks, I think.
Quite right. Yes,
you could. And it was like...
Well, she's the destroyer. You're
one of those androids we don't like. Yeah. Which fits into some Romulan mythology, maybe? I don't know.
The Disordered are all Romulan.
Yeah, somehow getting assimilated and then freed like affects Romulans in a more difficult way.
Yeah.
I guess.
And they look... Yeah. So, I don't know.
I don't know what to make of that.
I assume we're going to get more of that. But that struck me as odd because I feel like... anybody that went through that would be disordered for a while.
Yeah. That's interesting. I noticed that line too, but I don't know quite how to take that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't either. I hope it's not like they're pushing towards something like a Romulan origin of the Borg or something like that. I've seen a few people suggest that.
Yeah.
But well, I hope
I don't
not.
Think it's going there, but the disorder part that's specific to Romulans, I don't know what that means unless it's like there is this like hatred of artificial life and they just don't like... in their culture, and they really don't like having that put on them. I don't know. We'll find out, I guess.
Yes, we shall.
But let's talk about this for a second then, though. Like, in 2009, like, some of the backstory, and it was never done on screen, is that Nero's ship was augmented with Borg technology. And I'm like, I wonder how that might be able to play into this.
It'll be interesting if they pick up on that. I mean, clearly, from some of the things we've seen before, they haven't felt beholden to the 2009 Countdown comics, but...
Right, but, you know, okay, so I had that theory last time. I think we should just finish talking about it, because there's a couple more things to talk about in the Romulan ship here. Like, with the brother and sister here, okay, so I had thought that she was going to show up as the brother...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she didn't. She showed up as a female Romulan here. But Christopher Littlefield, who's host of our whatever our podcast
postcards.
On the line. Postcards on the line. He mentioned something and I kind of dismissed it right away. But now I'm thinking he might be right. What if this missing brother is Nero?
Oh, yeah.
The reason that I don't think that could be right is that... Narek in the previous episode says the brother was lost the previous year, which would be 2398, and Nero disappeared from the prime timeline in 2387.
Is that long earlier? That.
Yes. Yes.
You know what? Yes, you're right, because he would have, well...
I don't think it can be, because Nero's been gone for, you know, 12 years by that point, and he says the brother was lost the year before.
I meant to look it up, and I forgot, because I saw him talking about that,
think
too.
I don't think it works, but... But it does seem like it's there deliberately, and I don't know what that means or who the brother would be. I don't know.
Maybe he's one of the disordered.
Maybe. Oh, while we're talking about the sister who's apparently named Nerissa, was it just me or did it seem like when there were like shots of the ears that there were like little ridges on the ear?
I didn't notice.
I didn't notice me? That either.
Okay. Maybe it was just the lighting or something because I was like, that looks weird for a Romulan ear.
But apparently she got them back, so maybe they're healing.
Okay. But I have to say, that scene between, since we're talking about all this stuff in the cube, that scene between like Narek and his sister was totally weird because there was like this like weird sensual thing. Mm-hmm. It made me think like maybe they're not actually like blood brother and sister, but maybe it's like everyone is my brother and sister that's a Romulan, right? I hope. I don't know. It was just a little weird otherwise, no, right?
Lots of people have been calling them the Romulanisters.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she seems aggravated that he has this, if nothing else, a sexual relationship with Soji,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw somebody post, like, what if she's just an adopted sister? And I'm like, oh, that just makes it perfectly
fine. That doesn't make it any better. I like to think it's like if people talk about my brother or my sister as, like, the whole human race, you know, kind of thing. But
you're
like,
my brother, Justin.
For Romulans. Oh. Yeah, exactly.
You're my sister,
you reach,
Jesse.
Brother?
I reach Herbert.
I hope it's kind of like that and not literally brother and sister. But so anyway, a lot of stuff going on in the cube. Nope, we'll have to see
their
how
blood,
that plays
their
out.
Blood.
They're
this
siblings.
Game of Thrones in space, baby.
Yeah, and they keep like going up and whispering in each other's ears.
There's
like,
a lot of that going
miscalculation.
On.
We should just do the podcast like that. I have something to say to you, Justin. Can you keep a secret?
That scene. Oh, that made me so mad. Because here, there she is. She's talking about something serious. This is an important thing that happened to her. And he's like, I'm going to distract you by telling you that I'm falling in love with you because you're a woman, so that's going to distract you. That's just ridiculous. Yeah.
That women don't like to hear that?
No, well, we like to hear that, but not when we're in the middle of talking about how we had a mental breakdown.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So when we get to the predictions, I'll get to what I think might be happening with Narek. But for right now, I'm just not as much into his character, I would say.
No, neither am I. Definitely not hot.
I know you put that on social media.
A person
media.
Can be hot and not a good person.
Yeah, that line is so weird where she's like, I'm having this crisis. I don't know what's going on. I'm falling in love with you.
He's like,
what?
I'm falling in love with you. Yeah. End of conversation. I know.
Dude, like, come on, dude.
Okay, so I know I had an item here to talk about, like, the attack that happens on Picard, Laris, and Jaban. Should we talk about that a little bit, or do we feel like we talked about it a bit?
What about her mom?
Oh, yeah, she's not
you
real.
You want to talk about the mom as well?
Yes, the spy, like real. I said.
I think it's like a program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she's like, oh my God, Daj might be dead, right? And then I assume what happens off screen is she tries to call Daj, no answer. And then she calls the mom.
Yeah.
And when she calls the mom, it's really like some program that's meant to direct mm-hmm. her toward other things. So she's starting to ask questions and it's like, let me, and there's like a program that talks to her in such a way that it puts her to sleep.
Right, I guess. I don't know.
That
I guess.
Was strange, it was a
little,
yeah.
It was a little strange.
She got a puppy. Like, oh, yeah, that was cool. A boring conversation, and I'd fall asleep too.
Well, she's an android, so there's probably a sleep.
Yeah, there's a code in there somewhere. Code. Some type of code, whether it was a digital code that was mm-hmm. sent out. Because the same thing happened like in the previous one where she's like, find Picard, and then she went all android for Daj, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. But yeah, like, so again, so here's the mom, and that's what I thought in the first time. I'm like, that's not her mom. Like, there's something going on there. So one theory, right.
I think you're right about that one.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm wrong about the sister being the brother, and I'm wrong about Daj being alive still.
So far.
So far.
So far.
We'll see. Anything else on the cube?
No, I thought we can move on now.
I love the idea that Romulans have a false door in the front, but that's just so Romulan.
That's another thing, too, where it's like they love can it. Invent anything right now because we really know so little about the Romulans.
It's fantastic.
I know. They're finding a lot. I really love that about this show, that they're filling in mm-hmm. a lot of stuff about the Romulans because there wasn't enough filled in before, I think.
No. It's not very efficient, though. Let's build this door. I just watched the last episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and there was a whole running joke about, like, there's a garbage can, but you can't use it because it's just for show, right? Like, no, that's not the garbage. You go throw it over here and whatnot. And I'm like, so they have a front door that's just a show door that you don't really use?
It's funny. Like, I think I saw somebody comment, and they were like, Well, at my house growing up, we just never used the front door. We always used the back door. I thought that's what everybody did. Anyway.
So they're Romulans.
Apparently. Yeah. All right. So related to this, let's talk about the attack that happens on the vineyard, where these Romulan assassins come, and I'm actually not sure what their whole mission is. Do they want to kill people? Do they want to capture people? Like, what did you guys think was going on?
Kill, because they're shooting. They don't have stun setting.
So they want to kill Picard and Laris and Jaban?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Picard, yes. I don't know that they care about Laris and Jaban. They're there, so...
But why are they wanting to kill Picard? Because he's just getting into things he shouldn't get into?
He knows about the thing.
Well, clearly sent these guys.
Yes.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that because I almost had this feeling like Commodore O's whole thing is, you know, let's try to get some information from these androids, find out where more are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see necessarily how it serves her interest for Picard to be killed. I think it could serve her interest for her to use Picard to get to the information she wants. So that's why I thought somehow it was some other Romulan faction that was interested in killing Picard for a different reason.
Well, these are the ones Picard is saying that they're working on the planet with Starfleet's help. Mm-hmm. That's O, right? O had gone to see...
For trying to capture Dodge.
Right.
But I don't know about this when they go into the vineyard.
I think they're the same ones because of the uniforms and stuff and how they were working. O went to see Agnes. Agnes told her that Picard was leaving the planet. Right. Or O assumed that. So in the previous episode, O had said, I'll take care of Picard if I need to. Right. Now, jumping to the end, you know, we find out that Raffi is the source that, like, Raffi tells, I wrote it down here. Raffi tells Rios,
that
there's going to be an attack on the house because Rios calls him and says, my sources say it's about to get hot chez vous. And chez vous means your house, right? Yeah. So it's about to get hot in your house. And Picard's like, it's already done, right? So again, she had information that there was going to be an attack. So there was some form of communication. She knows already that there's a Starfleet mole who's like working on this.
I can see that.
Right. So that's the details that I got there.
Okay. But so here's my question because, well, first of all, let's acknowledge that Commodore O has sunglasses on, which is totally bizarre, but I love it anyway.
She better not be from the Mirror Universe.
I'm right there with you.
No, I saw you say that. That's definitely
and yes,
happening.
I know. It's just the humans with the sensitive eyes.
Anyway, Jurati, so O comes to see Jurati, and you only get to see a little of it where it's like, let's talk about your visits with Picard. And then, you know, later you see that it seems like all of these assassins are dealt with, but then there's another one that comes in and, you know, conveniently Jurati is there with a disruptor to kill this guy, right? So it's, I want to get your thoughts on it because I think it's a couple of possible things that are going on, but what's going on with Jurati at this point and what do you guys think, Chrissy?
I don't entirely trust her because she showed up far too quickly after.
Bite your tongue.
Okay.
Agnes is perfect.
Okay.
She's pushy Picard.
That's your thought process, and it's yours, and you can keep it forever. just because the timing. Although she was very freaked out about having killed that guy, so I don't know.
If O is a Vulcan, like I think, she could have done some type of a mind meld on her and put her under as like a sleeper cell agent. Yes, that is a perfectly plausible theory.
Yeah.
So I just don't want it to happen because I like Agnes.
Well, she could be not trustworthy and also not necessarily doing it of her own volition, as you say.
Exactly. If she is a spy, she doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. I think it's one of two possibilities. Either she's been brainwashed by O and knows when to be there, but, you know, kind of doesn't know that she's on this mission for O to gather the information, which makes me think if that is the case, then what the heck was it about to try to kill Picard if the real plan is to have her hitch a ride with Picard to get information and get her what she wants? That's the part that doesn't make sense to me if she's actually being used by O, right? Because the two don't make sense. Like, kill Picard and then the backup plan is get the hitch a ride and get the information?
It's, yeah.
Doesn't make sense to me.
Scares him off the planet.
So I tend to think the second thing, which is they're putting in a bit of misdirection to make you think that there's a connection, mm-hmm. to make you think that she's not trustworthy, to cover something else that might happen.
I agree with that. I don't think that's the case with Agnes. I don't think that.
Yeah. And I put out something on the postcards thread, and okay, this goes more into predictions, but I'll just say it now. But I thought that, like, if there is any kind of misdirection, it's misdirection to make you think that Jurati isn't trustworthy, but yeah. It's really Rios that's not trustworthy.
Yeah.
As a possibility. So anyway.
I don't like that either.
I know. I don't like that either as well, because we're going to talk about Rios, who's a character that I love. But like, it was pretty interesting just to see, like, they're making that connection. Is it misdirection? Is something else going on? I don't quite know. So I wanted to see what you guys thought.
I think that they were there to kill him. You know, I think that the only reason they didn't succeed is blind luck, again, because he dropped the plum.
Because he dropped something and but missed him.
I totally love that they had that place just loaded with weapons, ready for the day.
Yes.
I saw Laris go under the table, and she's like, there's one here.
Yeah, there was one under his desk. There was one under the coffee table. There was, like, a couple around there. They had weapons, like, all over the place.
Hey, you're former Tal Shiar, you're going to be prepared, uh-huh. right? Yeah. Yeah, I kind of, and it was kind of great just to see them in, like, hand-to-hand combat and doing their thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I wondered if Picard knew all those were there.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Probably. I don't know. But yeah, that was pretty great. That made me sad, though. Like, oh, they're going off on the ship and we're not going to see Laris and Jaban for a little bit. But I think we're coming back to Earth in not too long. Anything else on the attack that happens or what's going on with that?
No, I have something that I'll save for later.
Okay.
On that.
Because what I'd like to talk about now, because we've saved it up for a while, is Rios, played by Santiago Cabrera. I love this character,
hot.
But I wanted to see what you guys
think. Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it's a really interesting character because you see Picard beam onto the ship. I don't think in the dialogue they give it the name, but I think in materials it's called La Sirena, which is Spanish for mermaid. So you get on this ship and he's met by this EMH, which is really cool, with a British accent. And then you realize that, you know, Rios is really somewhere else in the ship, and he's got this giant piece of, like, shrapnel in his mm-hmm. in his shoulder. And anyway, like, there's this whole thing that goes on with what he talks about. So I wanted to get your impression. So Chrissy, like, what do you think of Rios as a character and what we see of him?
He's intense.
Intense.
I looked up the information on the book a little bit, and that's part of it, because he says he's got this tragic sense of life, and, you know, what happened? Well, I didn't die, you know, and he's mean to the EMH. So I think,
I don't think he was mean to the EMH.
I don't know if he's mean.
I read
just have
mean.
This banter. It's interesting.
But
but you mentioned the book. Do you want to talk about that? Cause you had done some research.
Okay. So this is it is a work, it's an essay. Oh, and by the way, it's on Project Gutenberg. So we'll put up, I'll make a note to put that, to link it if people want to read it. It's not terribly long. But it was written by Miguel de Unamuno. Unamuno.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I took French and not Spanish in school. He wrote it in 1913. He wrote it in the wake of his son. He was caring for his son, who had meningitis. And I couldn't find out if the son died from the meningitis. You kind of assume as much in that era. And it's all about how it's this existentialist work that he gets rid of the idea that humanity is a rational beast. And he says that humanity is an emotional beast. He says other animals can be rational. He says, I've seen a cat be rational more often than I've seen a cat cry or laugh. And he takes, I guess he ends it according to the couple reviews I was going through, he ends it by reversing Descartes' famous statement, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. And he says it's sum ergo cogito, which is I am, therefore I think. Yeah. So there's a lot of heavy existentialist stuff in here. The other thing is, this guy was essentially killed by Franco in 1936. He was put under house arrest and then died 10 days later.
Yeah. And I actually, as I was watching the episode, because, you know, you see this book and you see him read it, there is a point where he's talking to one of his holograms that you can see part of what he's reading. And I wanted to see if it's okay if I read what he was reading in that part, because I think it actually says something about his character.
It's not under copyright anymore. So.
Well, and this is just like a small part of it, because you can just see like the top half of one page. Mm-hmm. So on that page, which is page 140, it says, we personalize the all in order to save ourselves from nothingness. And the only mystery really mysterious is the mystery of suffering. Suffering is the path of consciousness. And by it, living beings arrive at the possession of self-consciousness. For to possess consciousness of oneself, to possess personality, is to know oneself and to feel oneself distinct from other beings. And this feeling of distinction is only reached through an act of collision, through suffering more or less severe, through the sense of one's own limits. Consciousness of oneself is simply consciousness of one's own limitation. I feel myself when I feel that I am not others. To know and to feel the extent of my being is to know at what point I cease to be, the point beyond which I no longer am. So,
pretty heavy.
Yeah, and I think that they're doing this intentionally to tell us something about the character. It seems like, you know, suffering is important to him in some way, or he's trying to deal with that. I don't know, but I just thought it was interesting just to like pause it and read that and think about the character. Yeah. So,
yeah,
I mean, because he has this like giant piece of shrapnel in his shoulder, he doesn't seem actually too terribly troubled by it. He's like, oh, an EMH, do something about this.
There's alcohol on it.
And the guy takes it out and he's going to use a dermal regenerator. He's like, no, don't use that, because he wants to, I guess, have the scar there or something to show his suffering.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty interesting character, and you also get to find out here that he was also in Starfleet, but as part of some secret ship or something, the Ibn Majid, and that something happened where like his captain was killed, and he gives like this graphic description of like his brains being blown out on the bulkheads or something that's affected him. So, like, in getting these people together on this ship, it's Picard, it's Raffi, it's Rios, it's Jurati. They've all been in Starfleet before, because we did find out Jurati had been in Starfleet before she was recruited by Bruce Maddox. And they've all had some like suffering or disappointment, or, you know, it seems like they've kind of come off of like a peak in their life. So they're kind of all coming together. And yeah, I just think it's interesting, like the crew that they're putting together. So what do you guys think about that?
I think it's really interesting. I think obviously Raffi is going to stick around, like she's saying right now again here. I'm not doing anything more for you. I'm just hitching a ride to this, to Free Cloud. And I'm not going to tell you why I want to go there. But I think that she's obviously going to stick around for the whole season and end up participating in all their nefarious activities.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. Yeah. But like what kind of spurs that and them getting together at the end of the episode? Well, it's Picard's persuasiveness, but Raffi's there because she's found the location of Maddox on Free Cloud. I thought that was really cool. I thought they'd like spin it out a little bit longer where Maddox is, but they actually know his location. And it's funny, like when Raffi was doing this research and she found this name Free Cloud, and all of a sudden like this image comes out with like the dice coming down, I was like, is she getting distracted by like online gambling right now, and she's going to stop her research?
It's a pop-up ad.
That's what I thought too.
It's like, oh, it's actually the answer. He's there. Okay, fine.
I wonder if we're going to see Lando Calrissian on Free Cloud City.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you thought that, but yeah, Free Cloud, whatever that. My mind went to the Cloud City and the Cloud Minders, but
yes,
it's probably something different. But yeah, so like they're all together and they're going to kind of go out to find Maddox on this adventure. So, I mean, that's where it's left at the end of the episode. So I guess we'll be on this ship and doing things to find Maddox and unravel this mystery for the rest of the episode. Yeah. And this has been like the three episodes almost like a pilot. So yeah.
I thought it was interesting that Rios had these two EMHs and they had different accents. And like even the subtitles specifically pointed out British accent, Irish accent for the two EMHs, which I thought,
was the EMH, ENH for the navigational hologram, which I thought was pretty cool. So
we're probably going to see a few more.
I have that in something I want to talk about later, I think.
And maybe. I thought it was interesting that they looked like him.
Yes.
So. Yes. My mother thought at first that he was talking to himself and we were seeing his mental projection of himself.
Yeah.
Until, he turned him off.
Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. I mean, has an ego as big as Louis Zimmerman, I guess, right?
I know.
Like making a hologram that looks like yourself. And he's talking to himself and almost like giving himself therapy at some point. It's anyway. Guys have other thoughts before we move on to the next section?
Just about the two holograms that we saw.
Yeah.
I think we can assume now that holograms are not being held in the same category as synthetics.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why.
Seems that way.
So maybe that'll get explained. And also I wonder if he stole those hologram programs from his ship, or can you just buy holograms and program them however you like now?
Okay, so I mentioned this on Twitter, and I got shut down pretty quick by Trek Geek Bill.
Okay, I didn't see that.
So does the inside of that ship not make you think of the Section 31-style ships from Discovery? I know it's not quite the same, but that's what I thought originally. And I know it doesn't look exactly the right way, but I'm wondering if this is a type of like ex-Starfleet ship or something that he's got.
I don't know. It didn't strike me like that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't get that either, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's reclaiming Starfleet stuff.
Mm.
But it definitely looks like a different design than you usually see for a Starfleet ship.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces here and there.
It's a good question. Oh, and when I guess you were talking about something related to this, but there is a line in there where Jurati is talking about why she wants to go along, but and she's saying something about like, well, this ship must have cost a lot.
And he's
like, yeah, it's pretty expensive. Yeah. So that, let's talk about that for a bit, because that made me think either, you know, something has changed and they use money now, or they're just joking, right? Like, oh, it's,
they've always used money.
There's always, yeah. It's just that you didn't need it in Starfleet in the Federation.
Are you calling Kirk and Picard a liar?
Yes, I am.
Saying that there's no money. Okay. I think it's possible, but I think they're just joking back and forth. But
there's a difference between a post-scarcity society and a moneyless society. Right? There's always going to be some kind of trade, and if we decide to do that with electronic, credit chips versus, giving sheep for wheat or something.
I think the way it's been portrayed before is that they have enough resources so they don't have to use money within the Federation. Right. But when they're trading with other worlds, they need to use some of their resources in order to gain currency to trade with those others.
Latin.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, like, there's always one-off lines in Star Trek that serve the purpose of the plot that they've got right now. And I mean, like, this whole Romulan thing. Like, a lot of people have pointed out over the last week that there was a line in The Defector where they're like, oh, I know a bunch of Romulan cyberneticists who would love to get your hands on you, Data. And now here we are being told that Romulus doesn't have any androids or AI of any kind. And to me, it's
cybernetics doesn't have to mean androids.
And it could just mean they want to take him apart.
But you're right. But what I'm saying is that, like, even if it meant cyberneticists is like for androids and stuff, like, that's one line that's a throwaway line in an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just they're writing an episode without any thought as to really what they're saying. Right? Because they're not thinking of what could we be writing 50 years from now or 30 years from now or 20 years from now. Right? Mm-hmm. It's just a line to service the episode right now. And I find it more fascinating and more interesting to think that we have a society that didn't try to pursue AI than trying to hold true to one line that's a throwaway line in an episode from 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, I lump that line into the same category of why does Scotty come out of the transporter and say, I bet Jim Kirk brought her out of mothballs when he saw Jim Kirk die on Generations, which was filmed after Relics, right? It's like, it's a throwaway line in Relics that it doesn't, I don't think should ever be intended to be held as any type of rigid in stone continuity. You know, like
yeah, I can see that.
But that's just how I get through the day and I'm still able to sleep at night. So
yeah.
Well, people are used to having the plot and everything laid out ahead of time. I mean, think about what Game of Thrones did to our television watching culture. You had to practically go back and rewatch all of it and go, oh, there was that one line, you know, so people are geared that way now. And
but something like Game of Thrones is different
but it's because not 50 years of content.
Right. I'm not saying
one person planned that whole thing out, right? You don't have a bunch of different people.
I'm not saying it's the same thing. I'm saying people think that way without making the jump and realizing that, no, this was not entirely planned out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So shall we talk about our favorite canon or books and comics connections in this episode?
I didn't have any. I didn't really pay attention this time.
Didn't have any. Nothing I had a whole bunch.
Yeah, I don't know. Nothing really popped out to me this time that really blew me away. So okay. go ahead.
It's all you.
Well, go ahead. Oh, me?
Well, the only one I had was...
I don't take all of yours.
The only one I had was I love that piece of music when it's, you know, the next-gen theme when we hear it. But it's the bigger...
It's more the motion picture, isn't
it? Yeah, I was about to say, it's got...
The arrangement of it.
I know nothing about music. It sounded bigger. Is that a musical term? It's not a musical term.
I think it's the motion picture because at the end they credit the theme for the motion picture.
Oh, okay.
But it is a great theme.
Yeah. It was just... It felt so good right in that in the spots where it was used. So, but other than that, you have a much more thorough list.
I did have a long list because I actually found there was a bunch of stuff in here. So did you guys notice when Raffi is doing her research and right before she finds Free Cloud, there's something in there about, I wish I had the exact Gorn egg? Line, the Gorn
oh,
egg,
yeah.
Like for the encryption or whatever. Second Gorn reference in two episodes. Mm. I think we're going to see some Gorn maybe, hopefully. I don't know. But I thought that was fun just to see it say Gorn egg. Mm-hmm. We already mentioned the Vasquez rocks. We talked about the shipyards for Beta Antares and Eridani A. I mean, Hugh's a canon connection as well. So when Jurati is listening to music, did you guys pick up on the music she's listening to before O comes to see her?
It was opera. Was it the one from
Cassilian Opera from Discovery? Cassilian Opera.
Love it.
So I thought that was a cool connection. Also, I mean, the EMH is a connection too. So when Raffi is doing the work on the screen, behind the screen is a bottle of Saurian brandy and it has like the little, you know, crook neck. Thought that was fun. The Stubborn Northerners, we talked about a little bit, but I just love that they're getting into like, oh, there's different kinds of ramens. The ones from the north have the ridges and the ones from elsewhere don't. So also when I think it's the ENH, the navigational hologram is talking, he talks about Picard as chief contact with the Q continuum, arbiter of succession for the Klingon Empire, savior of Earth from Borg invasion, captain of the Enterprise's DNE, man even worked alongside the great Spock. So there's like a bunch of different references to episodes and things right in there. So anyway, and I had something that was a more long shot connection. So we think Maddox is on Free Cloud, which it seems like because the dice were coming down, some kind of gambling planet, right?
Right. That's what I thought. I thought like you that her computer just got hacked and she had like malware on her computer or something.
And she was like, oh, I can't do online gambling right now.
Yeah.
But no, I saw that and I thought actually back to the Cold Equations books where Noonien Soong opens a casino.
Yes, that did not occur to me.
I don't know. It was just a little thing. So I don't know. I found that there was a bunch of different stuff and I thought that was really...
Well, there was a lot, but there was nothing really that blew me away that I was like, oh, that thing. I don't know. So yeah, I didn't catch all of those, but I saw some of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway. That's ones for this week. So should we talk about questions and concerns?
What about predictions?
I know you've been putting predictions before that. But,
have I been?
Yeah, it's fine. If you're excited about predictions, I'll reverse the order next time. How about that?
Okay, yes. Because I definitely want to get to that one here. So
predictions.
I got one, and this is a long shot.
Okay.
What if Rios himself is a hologram?
Hmm.
Because, you know, he's like, he's got this tragic sense of life. He's obsessed with these other holograms on the ship. It's like a bunch of holograms. What if at some point, like this last minute mission where his captain died, like somehow he got transferred, his consciousness got transferred into a computer system or whatnot, and he became a hologram, right? During that. So like,
wow.
Long shot.
I had not even thought of that. That would be amazing if that was true.
Yeah,
that,
just a long shot. Yeah. If we see like this weird obsession with all these holograms that look like him.
But that's kind of interesting, a hologram that can deactivate other holograms.
Well, I'm sure. I don't remember, but did the EMH deactivate the EMH2 in Ship in a Bottle? Or whatever it is, Message in a Bottle?
I don't know. But wow, that's a really interesting theory. Like, that would never have occurred to me.
Huh. So, that's a long shot. But it just, it made me think of that with this whole question. Like, also, like, the fact that he didn't really, yes, he threw the alcohol on him and he had a pain reaction. But the fact that he didn't want to, he wasn't acting like it hurt when he put the shirt on, you know, like, things like that. He didn't seem to be feeling any pain from the wound.
That's really interesting. Alcohol. Yeah.
Well, when he threw the alcohol on, he kind of went.
He drank so much he wasn't feeling pain.
Yeah. So, anyways, it was just a thought.
Yeah. So that's a good one.
Interesting thought. Yeah. What do you think, Chrissy? Any predictions for what's coming up?
I have no predictions. I'm not good at that.
Okay. I mean, it's not as much of a prediction, but I think we know that we'll see Riker and Troy next week. I think.
Oh, is that next week? That I didn't know.
I think that might be next week. Well, Frakes is directing next week's episode.
Okay. Yeah,
that makes sense.
The next two,
and I can't tell the next two. Yeah, I can't tell if Seven's going to be in.
I think she's in the next because she said it was his first one, and we originally thought that was episode three because they've kind of readjusted the order of these, like.
And I just want to emphasize again: she said at Star Trek Las Vegas that it's her first. Two episodes or something like that that she was talking about.
So yeah, that's what it was. So
more than two.
I think we'll see her next week.
That would be awesome. Really looking forward to that. Okay. I mean, I think we said it before, but I think definitely we're going to see Maddox, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've got it. They're searching for Maddox, right? It's the search for Maddox.
Okay. So here's the thing with that. After the first episode aired, there was a conversation on Twitter with Melinda Snodgrass. Okay.
Yep.
And in the course of that conversation, she made some comment to the effect of, I don't think we're going to see Maddox because I haven't heard anything from the Writers Guild. Okay. And before we recorded about it the next day, I was trying to find that tweet. I went through that whole conversation and it's gone. So I'm wondering if she said something and then realized that she shouldn't have.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's very likely we'll see him, and I think it's very likely it'll be the same actor.
Oh, yeah.
And that we'll see him within the next couple episodes, I think.
Well, we're definitely not going to see Lazarus.
Definitely not. I will agree with you there.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
That's my prediction. No Lazarus.
The whole mission for the back half of the episode is to rescue Lazarus
from that corridor.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be the whole back half of the season. But like as far as, I mean, I think we also know that we're going to have another main character come on Elnor next week.
Oh, yeah.
The Romulan with the sword.
Romulan.
We'll find out more about him. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's exciting, though, because I think there's been a lot to love about these first three episodes, but there's more to come and more characters to add and more things to, you know, expand on. So I find that really exciting. Beyond that, like I mentioned a little bit before, but that my prediction is Girardi is not the one that's like some kind of mole on the ship for O, but that it's Rios somehow.
No.
Which may or may not go against your hologram theory.
No.
Or maybe...
Maybe there aren't any.
So one other prediction about Narek. So we've seen Narek so far. It seems like he's some kind of... He's working for the Jat Vash or whoever wants to find this nest of androids or whatever. I think where they're going with it is that, you know, he has feelings for Soji. He's starting to doubt what he's doing. And at some point, he's going to turn against them and he's going to join Picard's crew in this quest to do whatever it is they're going to do. So.
And he'll have to kill his sister, maybe.
Maybe.
He'll die a painful death.
Seem to like her anyway.
Of his sister.
Or the other way, yeah.
But I do think they're setting him up to be turned in some way. I hope. Anyway, those are predictions. Shall we go to questions and concerns?
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Chrissy, you want to go first?
All right, I got two. Uh-huh. First of all, is Free Cloud a real or virtual place?
Ooh, interesting.
Because the first thing I thought of was the cloud, you know?
He's uploaded himself to Free Cloud.
And for somebody who's working with cybernetics and think about...
You mean Maddox is just pure consciousness at this point?
Well, who was it that dumped his brain into the Enterprise computer? And then Data.
Grandpa.
Yeah. Yam. Okay. There's people saying it right now.
Schizoid Man.
Yeah, Schizoid Man guy. Yeah. So that, and that to me, and if Raffi is trying to get away from everything, that would be a way to do it. So I don't know. That's just, I'm putting it out there. The other one.
Prediction. I don't know. It could be.
I guess it's a prediction / question. Here's my concern, because I've already seen some of it. Okay. Can we just accept that humans are human and they're sometimes going to do self-destructive things, and some people smoke even in the 21st century and then get on with our lives?
I'm okay with that. I've seen people like freak out because Tom Paris said nobody smokes. The future's like, whatever. I don't know. Like,
well, nobody smokes around him. Think about what, you know, how he grew up as opposed to other people.
I mean, also a lot of what we've seen is what happens in Starfleet, right? And there's like billions and trillions of other people out there doing stuff. And I think it's realistic to think that some of this is going on, right? I think it's fine. And I think it could be, as some people have said, that we've seen like a bubble within Starfleet of people that maybe tend to not have that kind of thing going on because they're Starfleet officers. But outside of
they don't need it.
There are other things going on.
Yeah.
I've seen people ask this question, how can you have Star Trek without Starfleet? And I'm like, we had Deep Space Nine.
Yes, it was universe. DS9.
Like, yeah, half of DS9's like is not, right? Is not in Starfleet.
I don't think that Star Trek is Starfleet. Starfleet is a major part of what we've come to love in Star Trek, but there is much more to the galaxy than Starfleet.
And you especially see this in the novels where they will explore a lot outside of Starfleet, right?
Yeah.
Star Trek isn't Starfleet. I think Star Trek is like a particular future and what happens in that future, right? That's the simplest way to think about it. And I think I find it hard to say like, well, that's not Star Trek in this thing, because it's that shared future and the writers can do what they want with it and we can see how we feel about it, but it's still Star Trek. But anyway, Brandon, questions? Unless you had more.
Oh, no, I'm done.
That was it? Okay. Brandon, any questions?
I'll let you go first.
Okay. Well, we've already kind of knocked out some of them because I wanted to talk about Jurati and what might happen with Narek, but this is more of a funny question about like the different holograms we might see on Rios's ship. Will we see like an ECH for command, an EEH for engineering, an EOH for operations, an ESH for security, another ESH for science? Like, I almost wonder if like he has all these holograms because it's usually just him on the ship, and if he needs help, like, he can activate all of these kinds of things.
Yeah.
I think it'll be fun if they do that and each one has like a different accent or something. But otherwise, I think we've covered things for me.
Yeah. So all the stuff that we've covered, like for questions and stuff that we've covered throughout the episode so far, those are just questions that I have that are like unanswered questions and where are they going to go? They're not problems that I have. And coming to this point, my temptation is to say I've got zero problems with this episode. I think this episode is perfect. I loved this episode. However, I can't let my fans down. So, I came up with one. So, the only thing, and I realize I'm reaching, and this is ridiculously petty, that this is just a trope of writing in general. Why did the Romulan give them a bunch of information and then kill himself?
Oh,
so, and I realize I'm being like really reaching on this one here, but I mean, like, I other than that, honestly, I don't even want an answer to that because I know that we need information and I know how writing works. So, I don't have any problems with this episode. I love this episode and I think this episode is perfect. So this is great.
Yeah, I think it's great. So let's actually, just talk about. Well, unless those were your final thoughts, Brandon.
Yeah, I guess. So those are my final thoughts. This episode was wonderful from start to finish. It was a wonderful kind of final slice of cake on the meal that we've had in these first three episodes. Like this definitely feels like if you had picked up a book. Mm-hmm. Right. We've just read chapters 1, 2, and 3. And that is also part 1 of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Yeah.
Right. And we are about to go into part two. And I can't put this on anybody else besides Kirsten Beyer. I think this is her heavy influence on this. You know, Michael Chabon too. But this feels like a book more than Discovery has felt like a book. You know, when I was on my first episode of the line, I'm like, we're going to get chapters in a book. And I, you know, watching the show, I never really felt that like I'm feeling it here. And you know, this is what I want out of modern Star Trek, right? What we're getting right now, where it is an extreme long arc and the entire story will be told out throughout the whole season. And I'm just loving every second of it. I think it's great. And I can't wait until Thursday. So this was a wonderful episode. This was wonderful.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Chrissy, final thoughts?
I also can't wait for next week. This was wonderful, and I just want more.
Yeah, I've really, like, looking at the three episodes as, like, you know, the first chapter, effectively like a pilot movie, I've really loved it. I mean, I think that, like, they're balancing these different intricate stories. They're also balancing having Picard back and how he'll be different and trying to kind of judiciously reuse the characters that we've seen before. And I think the writing's really great. I think there's a lot of great scenes and a lot of great lines and just a lot of really interesting things coming together. I mean, I've seen some people say that they think the pacing is, like, a little bit slow or something like that, but it hasn't struck me as that at all. It's felt like the pacing has been right for the story and that it's not just like all action adventure or something like that. So I've just really loved it. I mean, it's way too early to say, but it's quite possible this might end up being my favorite Star Trek series. Because yeah, it's very early to say that, but I've just really loved what they're doing. I'm just totally intrigued by what's going on. So I'm just really looking forward to more. And, you know, we have, how many more episodes?
Seven.
Yeah, I know. They've got a lot to do in that, but I feel like they balanced it really well in what they're doing and moving things along and making good writing choices. So it's exciting. Let's get into the second chapter.
Yep.
All right. Well, it's been so much fun talking about the Picard episode, The End is the Beginning, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Oh, let me think. What's an interesting Star Trek sound
effect? Phasers?
See, that's tough because how do you make a phaser sound? I don't know if you can make that with the human.
Yeah. Or you can do photon torpedoes. Choo, choo, choo.
I'll just be the one that's pew, pew, pew.
Oh, pew, pew, pew. Yeah. The Discovery phasers. Okay, cool. Awesome choice. And to come back to the point, I think I'm deleting this scene.
Literary Treks.
What was it that caused him not to be with his Paul immediately after coming out? What was it that made that relationship strange? Yeah. And I think it was that Culber had really lost himself in a lot of ways. And while Paul was his anchor, when he came back to Paul had learned something by losing you. And I think he became the Paul that Hugh needed. And I think that scared you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Until he sort of found himself again.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Because we've never seen all of those hairy mud bots again.
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, I would appreciate the, like, a mention in history in season 3. It's like, oh yeah, here's this time where the whole galaxy was crawling with these different hairy mud bots, yeah. And rounding them up took years.
That's what brought down the Federation. Hairy mud bots.
That was it. It was hairy mud bots.
Hairy mud bots. Oh no.
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
We got a lot of answers in this episode, which was really surprising to me. So, there, you know, who's Dodge and whatnot. Like, that's a thing I expected to find out in episode 10 going into this show, right? And here we are, you know, halfway through episode 1 and we know who Dodge is. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I'm, you know, that's cool that we're getting a lot of information. But getting that information is opening up more questions.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join in the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to come check out FreeCloud for all your gambling needs.
Oh, is that an offer? Wait, where can I go to take advantage of that?
Click here and pay by Bitcoin or PayPal.
Already paid. Excellent. I'm done.
Right on.
Tell me, what do I need to do next?
I really
need it right now.
You can click over here for virtual slots, over here for virtual craps, and over here for virtual poker.
Okay, I'll be back in about 17 hours.
If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button at Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show. Did we have another review?
We did get another review on iTunes, so we appreciate any reviews you can give us. It's actually a 3-star review with the subject, The Line, and it says, really good podcast about Picard, good discussion about the episodes, and it's lively. Don't agree on everything that the hosts say, but they are passionate, and that's what I like. 3.5 stars. And that's excellent. By Trekkie Jim via Apple Podcasts on February 3rd. So, thank you for providing that review.
We'll read all the reviews, the 3-star reviews, the 1-star reviews. Just give us a review. We'll read it.
They said they really liked it, you know?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So
people are allowed to disagree.
But yeah, thank you very much. Those reviews, keep them coming.
All right. And if, like me, you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and in most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link and put that in your favorite podcast app.
Be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line, feedback will be discussed on postcards on the line, and you can catch the full analysis right here on the main show. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the line and the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is FreeCloud, where all your gambling needs can be met. And if that's too busy or you don't have a secure connection, you can try the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher D. Littlefield will collect your feedback for the postcards on the line show. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
And if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at @trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Justin, where can people find you when you're not creating a bunch of holograms of yourself?
Oh, that's really tempting. I don't know. I think I'd drive myself crazy. I don't know how Rios keeps up with it. Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network, co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. We have a lot of fun every week with my friends, Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan, talking about TNG, and we've been talking about some Picard connections as well. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, and you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not figuring out if you're going to break any laws or intend to?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me here on the network with The Line, which you're listening to. I'm like, this is my general thing for my other shows. I go in this specific order. You can also find me on the Fandom Podcast Network with my friends Chris and Tom. We have a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and we go through all of Hitchcock's films in chronological order. And my friend Zach and I, we have a show on the United Federation of Podcast Network, and it's called Franchise Fatigue, and we cover movies, remakes, and sequels. And we are just a few days away. We've recorded episodes 1 and 2 for Creepshow 1 and 2 already, so watch for that on Wednesday, coming up here pretty quick, if you guys want to check out that show. I guess that's pretty much it. Those are the best places. So Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not suffering from snake leaf induced paranoia?
Snake leaf. Let's talk about what that is.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, but
I don't think it's a real thing.
Well, no.
No.
Right. So in addition to here on the line, of course, people can find me in the Babel Conference, and I'm on Twitter at the Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. And you can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis, and that's spelled Szilagyis, where we post about our historical research, and that includes my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. And we've got a new season. I've already got two episodes up, and I'm going to have some bonus content for Patreon subscribers pretty soon as well. So that's cool. And speaking of the history with the Zalagis page, my husband Jason's going to be giving a talk on the Nuremberg trials at one of the colleges where we work, and I'll be Facebook live streaming that on Wednesday, noon Eastern. So if people are interested, it'll be up there and can learn all about Nuremberg.
But he's giving that at a physical location as well as live streaming, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be sitting in the audience.
Give the location in case there are listeners who might be nearby.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it is open to the public at Delta College in Saginaw, Michigan. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Well, we'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line.
Before we finish up, I looked up snake leaf. There is a snake plant that has leaves. It's kind of like a house plant.
Yeah, I saw okay. that.
Tall
I was
leaves.
Looking, I was trying to figure
yeah,
out.
Yeah, anyway. Well, when we're not trying to figure out what snake leaf is, join us next time for another episode of The Line, where we'll talk about the fourth Picard episode, Absolute Candor.
And we'll speak about it candidly.
Always.
Yes, very
yes, absolutely.
Candidly, with candor, of course.
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
Crypto algorithm identification, Gorn egg.
Carry on.
Yes.
I will.